Rabbi Beryl Wine continues the series on Jewish values. Torah Scholarship is the name of the lecture, and that follows next at America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning Radio program, heard on listeners-sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, Rockland County at 91.9 on the FM dial, broadcasting live. The Sonia and Robert Gold Studios in Jersey City, New Jersey, around the world on the web, jmnam.org, and of course on the NSN app.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight's lecture deals with Limud HaTorah, Talmud Torah, Torah as a central and overriding value in Jewish life. Now, I'm going to divide the lecture into a number of different sections because the rabbis view Talmud Torah as having many different influences and purposes and reasons in Jewish life. So the Gemara says that the purpose of studying, the purpose of Talmud Torah, of studying Torah, especially Torah Shebal Peh, which to us is the Mishnah and the Talmud, is Lasuke Shmatzo Aliba de Hilchasa, that we should be able to arrive at the halakha. We should be able to arrive to know what are the practices of Judaism. What is a Jew supposed to do? Part of Torah, we all know, is greatly theoretical. It's a stimulating thought. But the purpose that the rabbis placed upon it was that Torah would teach us how to behave, what we're supposed to do. For instance, the Chofetz Chaim, in his introduction to the Mishnah Brura, the third section, the third volume of the Mishnah Brura, which is the monumental commentary on Orach Chaim, on the first of the four sections of the Shulchan Aruch. So the Chofetz Chaim says it's almost impossible to really be a Sabbath observer or Shomer Shabbat if one doesn't know what the halachas are, if one doesn't know what the rules are, and especially such a matter as Shabbat, which is rather complicated and has many different offshoots from it. So therefore the study of Torah is necessary so that you can just be a Jew to know what to do. And the rabbis therefore said, Lo amhor etz chosid. Someone who is ignorant can never be pious, because he doesn't know how to be pious. He doesn't know what the requirements are. He doesn't know what the Torah demands of him. And the rabbis stressed that over and over again. They said, Godol Talmud, great is study, shemevi l'dei maaseh. Because study brings to behavior. It brings to action. It defines for us the Jewish way of life. And that's why the Rambam said, for instance, in his famous statement, the Rambam, when he wrote the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam said, anybody who has my book will need no other books. Rambam said you only needed two books, the Torah Shebiksav, the Tanakh, the Bible, and my book, the Mishnah Torah. Because in the Mishnah Torah is every halakha that is necessary. You can know how to be a Jew from the Mishnah Torah. Well, he was a little bold in saying that, because of the fact that there has been no book that has spawned as many books as the Rambam's work, the Mishnah Torah. Last year in Israel alone, there were over 300 books published on the Rambam's book that needed no other books. So there have been literally thousands of books written about it. But the idea of the Rambam is clear. The idea of the Rambam is that to be a Jew, you have to know, and therefore he's giving you the book that will give you knowledge. And that's the primary purpose for the study of Torah, is to know what to do. To know how to be a Sabbath observer, to know what foods are kosher and what is not kosher, to know the nuts and bolts, the nitty-gritty of Judaism. Now, in Jewish life, there have been cycles. There was for a long time what we could call societal Judaism, in which people really weren't that knowledgeable, but they did everything right because the society, so to speak, buttressed them and instructed them. That's the way it was in the shtetl in Eastern Europe. That's the way it was in the mellahs of Morocco. There was a Jewish society. At the top of the Jewish society, there was a top, thin crust of great intellectual scholars and rabbis and teachers who set the tone for the community, and then the community behaved according to that. So people saw what their neighbor did, or they remembered what their father did, and that was their practice, even though they could not study Talmud or the Poskim at all. That has changed in our time. There was a famous article written by Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik here of the Hebrew University, by Yosher Ber Soloveitchik's son, and about 10 years ago, or maybe even longer, he wrote a famous article in Tradition. It's been recopied many times, in which he said that we have seen over the past century and past half century, really, the great shift in Jewish life from a societal life to a book life. In other words, it's not anymore what my father did. It's I'm going to look it up and see what the Mishnah Berurah says, what the Chazon Ish says. I'm going to see what it says in the book. And that is a fundamental sea change in Jewish life. Part of it is brought about by the fact that our society has changed greatly as well. The secularization of Jewish society has taken its toll. But nevertheless, even people who come from religious families of many, many generations standing, so whereas their father did what his father did, the son today is not necessarily bound by that. He's going to look it up in the book. The book many times does not coincide with the practice. And therefore, it explains much of what goes on within the traditional Jewish world today and the changes that have existed. People say, but I remember 50 years ago that we did this and this and this. Well, that's all true. But today's generation does not want to hear what you did 50 years ago. They want to see what's written in the book. They're following a different agenda. And therefore, to them, the study of Torah, the book defines the practice. Whereas in previous generations, the practice alone defined the practice. So the first idea, therefore, in the study of Torah is that Torah tells us how to be Jewish. It gives us practical advice, instructions. It would be, if you buy a complicated electronic device, you hope that somehow it comes with instructions that are somewhat understandable. It always gives me pause when the instructions in English and the instructions in German differ. But you hope that you have somehow, some instructions, right? What do you do? Where do you plug it in? So it would be impossible that the Ribbono Shel Olam would grant us a Torah and hold us to this kind of standard of behavior, etc., without explaining to us what we're supposed to do. So therefore, the study of Torah becomes the instruction book. Tells us what to do. So that's a practical reason. Jews don't like practical reasons. Doesn't stir our intellect or our emotions. So therefore, there's a second area that has nothing to do with practicality. The second area is that the study of Torah is the primary mitzvah of the Torah itself. having no practical effect and not meant to have any practical effect. The study of Torah itself is not a means. The first idea that I mentioned is that the study of Torah is a means. It's a means to the end of knowing what to do as a Jew. The second idea is that it is not the means, it's the end. That's it. Study of Torah, that's it. And that's based on the idea that the study of Torah supports the universe. I never would have made the heavens and the earth, God says, if it would not be for the fact that there's a Torah and people will study it. So without the study of Torah, the whole universe collapses. In the Lithuanian yeshivas, and it still exists today to a certain extent, in the Lithuanian yeshivas, therefore, they divided every day of the year into a mishmar, into shifts. 8-hour shifts or 6-hour shifts. And so that in the yeshiva, Torah was constantly learned, constantly studied, so that the world would be supported. So my father told me that many times, they had volunteers who wanted to do it Erev Yom Kippur, and who wanted to do it Yom Kippur night. The Gemara says on Rabbi Akiva that Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva never had a Bein Azmanim, never had any vacation time, but that only twice a year did Rabbi Akiva say, we're going to close the book and go home and get ready. One was Erev Yom Kippur and one was Erev Pesach. They're the only two times during the year. So there was this idea of constant study without any interruption whatsoever. And in Volozhin, which was the mother of all yeshivas in Eastern Europe, so that was sacrosanct that the yeshiva always had people in the Beit HaMidrash studying Torah. And since in those yeshivas people didn't go home for the holidays, etc., many of them were so poor they could not go home, and many for other reasons did not go home, so there always was a critical mass of students in the yeshiva year round, 365 days a year, and therefore Torah was constantly studied on the basis of this idea. Im lo brisi yomam v'loilo, if it were not for my covenant, which is studied day and night, chukos shamayim v'oretz lo samti, I never would have made the world, God says. The world can't exist without the constant study of Torah. Now, that makes Torah, as I said, an end. The study of Torah is an end. It's not a means to anything. Now, you'll add to it that there's a higher concept that the Talmud brings to us. It's called Torah Lishma. Torah for the sake of studying Torah itself. So, that it's, you know, a person can study Torah because he wants to receive rabbinic ordination. A person can study Torah because he wants to make a good match, right? People are looking for their daughter to have a Talmud Chochem, so he wants to do it. Or he studies Torah because of all sorts of other reasons. But the rabbis emphasize that there's a concept called Torah Lishma. Torah just for the sake of Torah. And therefore the Gemara says many, many things which to us don't resonate in our practical society. The Gemara says, for instance, Lo'olam ligras inish, a person should always study Torah, afal gav the mishkach, even though he's very forgetful, he can't remember at night what he learned during the day. That's why we have tape recordings of this lecture. Who's going to remember, right? The Alpha have the Lo Yoda, my Komar, the Gemara says. He doesn't understand what they're talking about. And this was carried to an art form in Eastern Europe, where the rabbis were on such a different level than their parishioners, that most of the people never understood a word that the rabbi said. And from that came the famous anecdote that about Rav Isaac Charif, Rav Isaac Slonimer, who was one of the great geniuses of Lithuanian Jewry in the 19th century, and he had a magnificent ability to take the most complicated subject and explain it so that even, you know, a piece of wood understood it at the end, what he was talking about. So when he came to say his inaugural lecture in Slonim, and so he spoke for 2 hours, and he took, rabbis then had that liberty, he took a very complicated subject, and he explained it brilliantly, and he explained it in such a way that everybody understood it. So the president of the congregation, the head of the Kehila, came over to him afterwards. He said, "Rabbi, I'm afraid you're not the man for us. Everybody understood you." So that in effect, they prided themselves that nobody would understand what they're talking about. But they would all sit there for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and made no difference. Because of this Gemara, they're right, even Afagav the Loyoda Maikomar, even though they don't know what you're saying, but the mere participation in a Torah lecture, being there and hearing it, helps preserve the world. And so that is a completely different view of the study of Torah, because of the fact that Torah has a purpose, a supernatural purpose. And the supernatural purpose is that by our study of Torah, everything keeps on going. And we say that the Torah, it says, "Vagisa bo yomam v'loila," morning and night, day and night you will study Torah. The Talmud brings us the story about Yoshua bin Nun in the middle of the war against the Canaanites. So the angel came to kill him. He sees an angel with a sword. He didn't realize it was an angel. He thought it was an enemy. He said to him, "Halonu atoim litzareinu? Whose side are you on? Identify yourself." And the angel said, "I'm a malach Hashem tzvokos. I'm an angel of the Lord of hosts. Ato bosi, I came now. And I'm going to kill you." So the Gemara says, what does Atobosi mean? He said, because Yeshua didn't learn that day. That day there was no Torah. And because there was no Torah, so therefore he was susceptible that the angel could come and overwhelm him. The angel did not kill him, because that night it said, Vayolen Ba'emek, that night he slept in the valley. So the rabbi said, Vayolen Be'omko Shel Halacha, that night he stayed in the valley of Torah, of Halacha, studied all night in order to protect himself and the Jewish people. So that's that's Talmud Torah as an end in itself. And that's what the Mishnah says when it counts all the mitzvahs, and it always concludes with Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Talmud Torah outweighs all the mitzvahs. So if a person has a choice to do mitzvahs or to learn, he should learn. The Chofetz Chaim would say that the Yetzer Hara will let a man do all the mitzvahs in the world except study Torah. When it comes to study Torah, there the Yetzer Hara, the Sotan, stands up, gets on his hind legs, and he says, "No, we're not going to allow that to happen." And that was and still is the philosophy of all of the yeshivas that exist in the world. And that's why all other things really don't count. And all other things they're not obligated in. It's not part of their obligation. Without entering into the political ramifications and societal ramifications of the matter, that is that's the story with the army, that's the story with getting a job, that's the story with doing anything. They don't know they're obligated. Their obligations isn't learned. And not only that, By sitting and learning, that is how the Jewish people are defended. They're not only defended, that's how the world goes round. If it wouldn't be for that, then there is no universe. The classic example of this is the story of Reb Shimon ben Yochai and his son. The Romans, Shimon ben Yochai had a very negative opinion of the Romans, and he voiced it. And there was an informer who overheard what he said, and it was the Romans had spies in the Beis HaMedrash, and he informed the Romans that that Shimon ben Yochai is agitating against them, and the Romans issued a death warrant to arrest him, to kill him. So he and his son, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, fled into the Judean desert. And they lived in the desert for 13 years. And they lived in a cave. And they lived off of carobs. There was a carob tree. Buxer. Fresh buxer is edible. In America, we used to get the dried buxer, which was absolute wood. But fresh buxer is edible, fresh carobs. And he had a spring of water that miraculously flowed near the cave, and he stayed there for 13 years. In those circumstances, he and his son reached enormous spiritual heights. They studied Torah all the time. They didn't do anything else. So when he came out of the cave, I mean, the Talmud wants to show us this paradigm. When he came out of the cave, so then he walked around and he saw that there are Jews that are farming. They're plowing and they're sowing and they're harvesting, and there are Jews that are running stores, and he saw the world the way it is. So he said to them, Manichin chaye olam v'yoskim b'chaye shoa. You are forsaking eternal life in order to waste your time with what is only temporary. And he railed against them to such an extent that he damaged them. So then the Talmud says, so a voice came out from heaven and said, did you come out of the cave to destroy my world? Halichrav olomi yotzosa. Well, you know, you're on a certain level, so you're there, right? But you leave these people alone. They're not on that level. But the Gemara says, nevertheless, that Reb Shimon ben Yochai and his son, Reb Elazar ben Shimon, are the examples of what are called Toratam Umnatam. Their profession is the study of Torah. And we see that throughout the Talmud. We see that they didn't even stop to pray. The Gemara says that, you know, if it's Torosan Umnosan, then you only chayv in Kriya Shema. So the rest of it is, you know, and that you see in the yeshivas today also. And that's part of the idea, you know, that everybody walks around with a book. People go to a wedding. People go, you know, they go visiting. Or they come with a book and they sit and study. So on the surface, it looks to be rude. Especially since they don't offer to share the book with you. But that's a fulfillment of this idea of Torosam Umnosam. This is their profession. This is what they do. This is what's involved. And so therefore, it's an attempt to emulate the great Reb Shimon ben Yochai and his son Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. So we have here two ideas of Talmud Torah, which to a certain extent are, if not contradictory, but they certainly are different. One sees Torah as the study of Torah as being a practical study, and the other sees it as being impractical. It makes no difference. And the Gemara says many times, it's just it doesn't make a difference whether you're studying, you know, Hilchos Shabbos, or you're studying Negoyim and Oholos. which Bizman Hazeh have no effect upon us whatsoever, doesn't make any difference. Torah is Torah, whatever you study. Third idea about the study of Torah is that Torah is the cure, or it's the inhibitor of our evil instinct. Torah can make us a better person. So again, it's a different idea. It's not a matter of practical behavior in terms of to know what to do. And it's not a matter of supporting the universe, which Torah Lishmo does. But a person has a Yetzer Hara, a person has an evil instinct, a person has desires, and he finds it difficult to control the desires. So therefore, the Gemara says, Barasi Yetzer Hara, God says, I created a Yetzer Hara, Barasi Torah Tavlin Lo, I have created the Torah as the medicine for it, as the antidote for it. And the study of Torah is therefore a moral act. It makes us a better person. Now we'll see how the Gemara qualifies that, because sometimes you meet people that know a lot of Torah and you wouldn't necessarily go into business with them. So the Gemara itself is aware of the practical problems of saying carte blanche that Torah makes you a better person. But the Gemara therefore moderates it. But the basic idea is that a person has the possibility of becoming better by studying Torah. So the Gemara says, Lolam yargi zodam yetzer tov al yetzer hara. A person should always attempt to arouse his Yetzer HaTov to do battle with the Yetzer Hara. In other words, a person should never give up on himself. He should never say, what's the use? Because that's the greatest weapon of the Yetzer Hara, the greatest weapon of evil, is passivity, inertia. Can't do better. Can't be a better person. Just the way it is. I gave up on myself. The Torah doesn't allow us to give up on ourselves. That is the greatest cop-out. What do you mean? And the Gemara has all sorts of examples. Are you poorer than Hillel? Are you richer than Rebbe? Are you handsomer than Yosef? You know, and we have all the time the older people that came to greatness in their later years. What do you mean you gave up? Why did you give up? Who gave you gave you the permission to give up? And that's generally the Jewish people. They have to look at themselves that way. Not only as individuals, but as the Jewish people themselves, as a people. So it would have been very easy for us to give up after the Holocaust. It would have been very easy for us to give up in many, many stages along the way. So we have to always arouse our Yetzer HaTov to do battle with the Yetzer Hara. Inotzchol mutov. If you're able to conquer it that way, good. You did it. Im lav. But if, however, that doesn't work, you're unable to control the Yetzer Hara. So the Gemara says, Yasok batorah. And make Torah your business. Study Torah. Studying Torah will help you in mobilizing your Yetzer HaTov to overcome the Yetzer Hara. Now, what about the problem that we raised, that it's not necessarily so? And we'll see the Gemara itself recognizes that. So the Gemara says, we have to understand that Torah is not acquired easily. There are no shortcuts. And therefore, Torah niknis al yedei yisurin. There are things in life that one obtains, one achieves only through yisurin, through pain, through tests, through difficulties. So Eretz Yisrael is one, the Gemara says. Eretz Yisrael niknis al yedei yisurin. So it's not only, we're going to have a whole lecture about Eretz Yisrael, so I don't want to dwell on it tonight, but we can understand that, right? That Eretz Yisrael is painful. Right? It's not like, it's not South Dakota. It's painful. Torah also is painful. Torah requires effort. It requires sacrifice. It requires time. It requires concentration. And it requires the fact that you have to give up on other things in order to acquire Torah. It's not easily acquired. So therefore, the Gemara says, easy Torah will not help you. Hard Torah will help you. Now in our time, because of the fact that we have the decline in the generation, so we've made it easier to get Torah, right? There are wonderful tape series available. There are books available. There's an English Talmud that is marvelous, that never was available before. Now, all of these things have raised objections among certain people and factions in the Torah world, because they say you made it too easy. You have to make it hard. And that by making it easy, you lose this advantage.
JM in the AM, Rabbi Beryl Wine, on the topic of Torah scholarship from the Jewish Values series. Our 9 days format continues here at JM in the AM. 29 minutes after 8 o'clock, as we say good morning on this Tuesday. A couple of reminders. This coming Sunday, the Tisha B'Av prayer service at the Isaiah Wall takes place starting at 2 p.m. Make sure you bring your towels and tefillin to 43rd Street and 1st Avenue, where the annual Tisha B'Av Mincha is going to take place. Tomorrow we have an opportunity to speak about Project Inspire, which has a brand new film available for this Tisha B'Av. We'll do that tomorrow morning in the 8 o'clock hour here at JM in the AM. On Thursday, we'll speak about the OU and their special webcast. You can go to OU.org for information about the special webcast for this coming Tisha B'Av with Rabbi Weil and Rabbi Weinrib. Go to OU.org for details about that. And, of course, Monday, we'll get back into our regular format here at JM in the AM. Rabbi Beryl Wein continues with the series on Jewish values. This is the topic of Torah scholarship. And information at 1-800-499-WEIN or rabbiwein.com, rabbiwein.com.
Problem with that is that if the choice is to have this kind of Torah or to have no Torah, it certainly is better to have this kind of Torah. If the only way I can study Talmud is with the Schottenstein Talmud, then I'm going to study it with the Schottenstein Talmud. And if you look through Jewish history, almost every time that anything came into being, there was opposition. When Rashi, for instance, made his commentary to the Talmud, there are those that said, you know, that's no good, right? You're supposed to loan the Talmud. What do you know? He comes along and explains it all to you. And the Marshal complained later in the 16th century. Every time that there has been anything that has made it, so to speak, easier, it's been only begrudgingly accepted. But the as the generations decline, as we go farther from Sinai, as the problems of society increase, as the pressures upon us increase, so naturally we need all of these aids, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to do it. The Gemara darshans on the Pasuk in Parshas Chukas, it says, Zos HaTorah Odom Kiyomus Bohel. This is the law regarding if a person dies in the tent. So the law describes the ritual of cleanliness and uncleanliness of tumah and tahara, etc. The Gemara takes that posuk out of context and says as follows: Zos haTorah Odom Kiyomus Ba'Oel. This is the Torah. Ein haTorah Miskayemus. The Torah has no chance to exist. Somebody who's willing to kill himself, so to speak, in the tent of Torah. Somebody who's willing to work at it. And therefore, that was one of the primary things in the yeshiva, in all yeshivas, was the person that was willing to work at it at all sacrifice. The great masmid who spent many, many hours in the study of Torah, depriving himself. So in Europe, there were masmidim that studied 18, 19, 20 hours a day. And to stay awake at night, they would put their feet in cold water. They would stand. So Odom Kiyomus Boel, he's willing to die in the tent of Torah. The Gemara gives medicine advice. Chosh Berosho, person has headaches, migraines, Yasok Batorah, let him learn Torah, his headaches go away. The Revelt says they'll get a bigger headache from the Torah, so therefore the other headaches won't disturb him anymore. The Gemara says, in order for the Torah to have value for a person, that it should help him against the Yetzer Hara, he has to be a person that does not speak Lashon Hara, that does not speak slanderous speech. The Gemara says, B'nai Yehuda sheikpidu al lashonam, in the time of the Talmud, in the time of the Mishnah rather, those who lived in Yehuda, in the southern part of the land of Israel, so they were careful in their speech. They were very careful not to say things that were improper according to Jewish law. So therefore, Niskaimo Torosom Biodom. So therefore, they became great in Torah, and the Torah that they said, they were able to retain. B'nei Galil, the Jews who lived in the Galilee, Shelo Hikpidu Alishonam, that they had loose tongues, they were not careful as to what they said. So Lo Niskaimo Torosom Biodom. Their Torah evaporated. So therefore, Torah is a moral force for you, but it needs a preface. And the preface is that first you have to control your tongue. If you control your tongue, then the Torah will help you control all the other things. The Gemara also says the person has to be humble. A Torah scholar has to be humble. Now the tendency of scholars is not to be humble, because that's why he's a scholar. I know so much more than the people that I'm talking to, so therefore, look at me. So that's why the Gemara has Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah itself has Moshe Rabbeinu, as the paradigm of the great scholar and teacher, because Oish Moshe Onav Me'od Mikol Onam Hashel Pnei Adoma. Moshe is the most humble of all people. Moshe has no titles. Not a Rav Agon, a Tzaddik, the plain old Moshe. Because only in humility do we find that the Torah rests. And therefore the rabbis equated that with the verse that says, Lo Bashamayim Hi, the Torah is not in heaven. So there are many interpretations of that. But one interpretation is, the Torah is not by the highfalutin people, the people who have their heads in heaven, who think so much of themselves, who think they know everything. So therefore the custom was amongst Jews, amongst Jewish scholars, that in order to humble themselves, they would sign their letters, Anochi Akota, I, the small person, right? But then it became like so de rigueur that everybody signed Anochi Akotan. So the story is told that somebody once sent the Chassam Sofer a letter, and the person, the Chassam Sofer, did not have a high opinion of the person's scholarship. And the man signed it Anochi Akotan. So the Chassam Sofer said, oh, he also thinks he's a Kotan. Right? So it's a reverse humility also. But true humility is necessary for Torah. In order for the Torah to operate against the Yetzer Hara, the person has to raise himself to the level that somehow he doesn't think so highly of himself. And therefore the Torah says, the Gemara says, Divrei Torah koshin liknosam kiklei zov. To acquire Torah is expensive as to buy golden plates. But v'noach le'abdon kiklei zchuchis. But Torah is so fragile, it's as easy to lose it as the most fragile crystal. Just touch it wrong and it gets nicked. So Torah, therefore, has... it's an elusive thing. It's trying to hold mercury, quicksilver in your hands. And in order to do so, therefore, again, you have to be the container. And the Gemara says the famous idea. It says, "V'zos haTorah asher sum Moshe." This is the Torah that Moshe placed. So the Gemara takes away the word sum and substitutes for it the word sam. Sam is an elixir. It's a mixture. It's a medicine. The Gemara says, "Zocha." If a person is fortunate enough and meritorious enough, naselo sam chayim, then it's the elixir of life, Torah. Lo zocha, if he is not, has no merits, naselo sam amovis, then it's poison. The rabbis therefore said not to teach Torah to a Talmid Sheino Hogun, to students who are not proper, who don't behave properly, who turn out to be bad, because you make them worse. Because now they think they know Torah. And therefore it became a very sensitive thing. This idea of who to teach Torah to, what kind of person. It happens many times. Anybody who's in education knows the difficulty of sometimes you have a student that you just can't do it. So you have to send them away. So most of the time, the student never appreciates the favor that you did. But sometimes you have, once in a while, a student that really appreciates it, and he comes back 10 or 15 or 20 years later and says, "Rebbe, you were right, and you saved me, and that turned me around, the fact that you threw me out of my ear." But that also is part of this idea that Torah is... the building of moral character, and if you don't want to build your moral character, right, so then it becomes poison instead of becoming an elixir of life. Now, this idea, therefore, means that you don't necessarily have to spend your whole life studying Torah. As not like in the second idea. The Gemara tells us, Bochi Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar wept. Before his death, he wept. Omar lo Rabbi Yoshua. So Rabbi Yoshua, who is his colleague and companion in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, said to him, Amai ko bochis. What is there to weep about? Im yishum Torah. You're weeping because of the fact that you did not accomplish everything that you wanted in the study of Torah. Halo shoninu, did we not learn? Echor amarbev, echor amamit. There are those that learn more, and there are those that learn less. Bilvad shi'chaven libo l'shamayim. As long as his intent was pure, that he intended it for the sake of heaven, and Torah will protect him in this world and in the next. There's a piece in the Chofetz Chaim, in the Shmir Saloshim, rather, that the Chofetz Chaim writes that people should learn Torah 1 hour, 2 hours a day, and that they should work the rest of the time. He said the elite should be held to the standard of learning a lot of Torah, but for everyone, for the masses, they never intended that everyone should be all day studying Torah. So therefore, according to this idea, right, so the study of Torah is for you a protection, it's a medicine for you. And the rabbis warned us, Oy lohem lesoneim shel talmidei chachomim, meaning woe to the scholars, she'oskim ba'Torah, that they study Torah, vein bohem yiras shamayim, but they really have no fear of heaven. So I've often mentioned that when I was a rabbi in Miami Beach, somebody gave me a book hilarious book written by an Episcopalian bishop, and the title of the book is How to Be a Bishop Without Being Religious. And you know, you just have to change a little, and it's us, right? It's the same, right? It's the same thing. So, you know, the story is told, the apocryphal story, but just to illustrate the point, is that two rabbis were leaving the rabbinic convention after 5 days of scholarship and heated debate and everything, and one turns to the other and says, "But Shloimeh, what if there is a God?" So that's what that's what it said. Woe to the Talmid Chacham Shein Bem Yirat Shamayim, right? So then it becomes purely intellectual exercise. And that we are not interested in. That's not the purpose. That's part of the criticism of what is today the scientific study of Talmud, which exists in Judaic study programs around the world and in universities, is that the study of Talmud, it does not presuppose any Yirat Shamayim. It's like studying Lahavdil Shakespeare or Chaucer. And so therefore, in the traditional view of the matter, that's not it. And it never will be it. And therefore, its value is very, very minimal, no matter how many reams of scholarship, no matter how many books are written, no matter how many degrees are granted. Fourth idea about the study of Torah is that Torah binds the generations. Torah is the means by which the generations of the Jewish people, parents, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, have something in common. Because otherwise, we really don't have anything in common. My father, a blessed memory, so he lived with my son, with his grandson, and with my son's children, who were his great-grandchildren. So my father was born before the Wright brothers flew an airplane. And my grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, are, pocket phone, you know, any cellular phone, they can do anything on it. They're computer literate at 4 years old, they can do anything. My father is afraid of the machine, as is his daughter-in-law, right? Never turns it on, right? So what does my father have in common with that child? So you know what my father had in common? He taught them all alephbets. He sat down, he taught them all alephbets. Taught him the Hebrew alphabet, and then he taught him how to daven, he taught him Torah Tzivalonu Moshe, and then he taught him the first Mishnah. So that bound them together. Or that gave him a relationship. They were able to span four generations in between. So that's what Torah does. The Chazal say, therefore, Kotn Ayodeya Lidaber, when a child learns to speak, Aviv Lomda Torah, his father is obligated to teach him Torah right away. When his kid's 2 years old. Torah Mahi, what Torah should he teach him? Torah Tzivalonu Moshe Marosho Kiilas Yaakov, the Gemara says. Teach him that posik. And the Beforshim say, not only teach him that posik, teach him the concept that there's a Torah in the world. That Torah Tzivalonu Moshe. Moshe commanded us and explained to us a Torah. And that will bind you together. And that will be a bond between generations. And the Gemara says, even though the child doesn't understand one word you're talking about, he parrots it. So you know, children many times before they read, but if you read the story to them enough times, they memorize it. They know the story. So they pretend they read it, even though they don't read it. So here also, even though the child is not ready, right? Tell him, teach him. Because that will be the bond between the generations. And that's why it says in the Talmud, Divrei Torah aniyim b'mokam zev, ashirim b'mokam acher. The words of Torah are poor in one place, but they're wealthy in another place. So the simple explanation of the Talmud is that regarding one subject of the Torah, these words really don't teach us anything, but regarding another subject that we're going to get to later, you'll see that it will be of value. But the rabbis also said that this goes on the generations, right? When you teach the child, it's aniyim, it's poor, right? The child doesn't understand what you're talking about. But it'll be ashirim b'mokam acher, 40 years later, it'll be rich for him. He'll have a memory of you. I still taste in my mouth the piece of lump sugar that my Zeta put in my mouth when I sat on his lap and he taught me Chumash and Rashi. I was maybe 5 years old, and if I got the Rashi correct, so he shoved this piece of cube sugar in my mouth, you know, which was the ultimate Lithuanian reward in the world. So I can still taste it. So that's my bond. That's my connection. And Chazal say, therefore, kol ha-melamed es b'no Torah, he who teaches his children Torah, malalov akosuv, the posuk states about him, ki ilu lomdo lo, if he taught it to his son, livno, to his grandson, leven b'no, to his great-grandson, ad sof kol ha-doros, to the end of all generations. It's all on your credit. And then the Gemara says, Kilo Kiblo Mahar Sinai. To the child, that's Mamet Har Sinai. That's standing at Sinai and hearing the Torah for the first time, because that's his first experience with Torah. So when his father teaches him Torah, so then that becomes the Mamet Har Sinai. That becomes the moment of Sinai. And the Gemara also says a rule that a Torah machzeres alachsanya shalah. The Torah comes back to its inn. We have a trait, not a halacha, but a trait that the Gemara learns from our father Avraham Avinu, that if one regularly stays at a certain inn or a certain hotel, so let's say when he starts out in the world, it's only 4 stars, and then he makes it big. So then he goes to 5 stars, he goes to 6 stars, he takes a suite, he rents a townhouse on the beach. The Gemara says you should go back to the same inn that you started with. You should always go with that Linda Torah Derech Eretz. The Torah taught us good manners. That if this is the hotel that you stayed in and it was good enough then, so it's good enough now too. Now, the Gemara takes that and says that that's a rule by Torah too. A Torah machzeres alachsanya shalah. The Torah always comes back to its inn. It's meaning to the same families that treasure Torah, that supported Torah, so then the Torah comes knocking. So some generations don't open the door, but then there'll come another generation, the Torah will come back and it will open the door. We're living witness to it in our time. Generations of Jews that have been estranged from Torah, and all of a sudden there comes a generation that's more than willing to learn and does learn and accepts Torah. And so the Torah keeps on coming, it knocks at the door. And that was the concept that the rabbis had, that that's what binds the generations together. And therefore that's a great purpose of Torah. Fifth purpose of Torah is the honor of Talmidei Chachamim. Is that the people who study Torah also have a great, they're the representatives of Torah. So therefore the Rava said in the Talmud that people are foolish, he said, that when you open the ark, so everybody stands up for the Torah, and when you carry the Torah, everybody runs over to kiss it. So he said, he says the Torah is a piece of parchment, and that they don't stand up for a Talmud Chacham, for a living human being, for someone who studies Torah. So he said, Hane Inshe Tapshoi, foolish people, that they don't appreciate what a Talmud Chochem is. And the Gemara therefore cuts Talmud Chachomim a lot of slack, a lot of leeway. There's a famous Gemara about Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. So he met a man in the street. The man in the street was a very ugly person, the Gemara says. Kama mechoer odam zu, how ugly he is. So Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, in a loud whisper, remarked how ugly that man is. So the man came over to him and he said, why do you complain about me? Why don't you go to the manufacturer and ask him why he made such an ugly person? So Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon felt very badly, and he apologized. The man said, I don't accept your apology. He met him again, and he asked if he apologized, he asked to be forgiven. Again, he refused. So then the rabbi of that town said to him, forgive him, even though he's wrong, because of the fact that he's a great Talmud Chacham. So we have to cut a little leeway, a little slack for people of Torah. Now, you even have an ambivalence about Talmidei Chachomim who have left the fold, like Acher, like Elisha ben Avuya. So the rabbis wanted to have nothing to do with him. Reb Meir nurtured him because he was a great Talmud Chacham. So you have this ambivalence because of the fact that the Torah somehow demands that we give honor to a Talmud Chacham. And Torah is the great leveler. Poor Yisaru b'nei Ayinim shemehem takes a Torah, Geirim, converts, all sorts of people can be great in Torah. The Gemara in fact says, how come that so many Talmidei Chachomim have children who are not Talmidei Chachomim? Why should that happen? So the Gemara says that the people shouldn't say that being a Talmud Chacham is a matter of heritage. A Yerusha.
JM and the AM are by Beryl Wine with the a series on Jewish values. The lecture is entitled The Torah Scholarship. And that is the latest of the Rabbi Beryl Wine lectures that we have for you here at JM and the AM during our 9 days format. Information about the lectures at 1-800-499-WEIN, 1-800-499-WEIN, rabbiwein.com, rabbiwein.com.